Conciliums
with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this. This is like the warrant officer, the petty officer.
It should be.
Well, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good after that amazing attendance we had at our Second Life podcast last week. Thanks to Catherine from the scholarships program,
and
who
Nick.
Felt sorry for us. And Nick, the CS student. Thank you so much, Nick. Nick was featured prominently in that.
Now, we should be careful because this will air, this will drop before Live at the Cleft Lounge.
When's Live at the Cleft Lounge?
Probably next week. My headphones, as you remember, I did not have my good headphones because I forgot them. Because
you're a lame-o.
That's as good a reason as any. So I had crappy headphones that did not work, and I was mostly watching the audio on the Audacity.
Is the audio crap?
It's not crap so much as it's just going to take a little work.
It needs a little adjustment. I too loud, too soft? Were you too loud?
Yes.
Okay, so people were all over the place.
Basically,
well, that's okay. So when you hear
this, the audio is drunk and needs to go home and sleep it off.
Do you think you can fix it?
I'm just going to fix it.
Okay.
This is a real do or do not, there is no try kind of thing.
Okay, so you're the Yoda of audio engineers.
If I spend too much time thinking about, am I going to get this done, okay, it's not going to get done.
But when that gets posted,
you'll hear live from the Cleft Lounge 2.
Yeah.
Student faculty interaction.
Oh, and live from the Cleft Lounge 3.
We'll be designing for complexity.
September 19th. And we want to keep it on the 19th because the 26th, I think, is a big football game here and no one's going to show up.
Right. So we have changed it. Is the 19th the afternoon of the 19th, 5
I think
o'clock?
It's 5 o'clock.
In the Cleft Lounge.
And then on the 20th, that's
all of our listeners,
Parents Weekend. And we will be having a number of events on the first year reading. Living with Complexity, by Don Norman. And that's going to be the topic of our thing.
I think Amit and I will get to interview him for Lost in the Stacks.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Which is the one and only Research Library Rock and Roll Radio Show on WRAK Atlanta, 91.1 FM, Fridays at noon.
Let's do one of these.
You know,
like Victor Borga or something like
that. You know what was awesome this weekend? We got a big bump on
Labor Day.
On the Lost in the Stacks podcast. Yeah,
because really? People were like, well, I got nothing better to do. It's raining on Labor Day.
That's right. And you know, libraries. No, we did a DPLA episode, the Digital Public Library of America. And the executive director of DIPLA or DPLA, he listened and he liked it and he enjoyed the music, so he retweeted it.
Sweet.
Yeah, it was a score. It was wonderful.
Wow, that's great.
So someone needs to listen to us and retweet us. that's the trick. Although I always find it interesting that the it's not like we get people to listen to this and then that's the success. It's we need to get some number of people to listen to us once because then some percentage of that, I think probably about 1%,
will stay.
We'll continue
listen
to listen
again.
Exactly.
And the remaining 99% will alert the authorities and say these people should be sedated.
I don't think the authorities sedate anymore.
They don't?
I think they tase or shoot.
What? No, shooting you with that beanbag gun? I like that one. That kind of incapacitates you. But, you know, you can.
You imagine how fast a beanbag has to go to break a rib?
Pretty fast. That's what I'm thinking. I'm going to go with pretty fast.
What do you think is the percentage? If 100 people hear one episode of Consilience, and let's say it's a good one, it's a nice one,
as opposed to the piece of crap you normally put out.
There were a couple pieces of crap.
Has some crap. You watch the Tonight Show. Sometimes it's not that good.
There are some lost podcasts, lost Consiliences with Pete and Charlie.
Right, that you just said, look, this will never see the light of day.
You've always been very positive on them, but I usually say I don't think this will want to work.
Well, that's okay.
Pete. It makes me sad, Pete, to listen to this one. I don't want to give it to the people. How many?
Just keep that for your own spiral of depression.
I actually have a quality control guy who's going to help me out. I do. I got a buddy who's.
Does he have a mailing address? Does he actually have a home?
He's a big booster of the show now. He came to it after, I think, 26 episodes and was like, hey, not bad. And I'm condensing our conversation. Listened to all of them, has listened to some of them twice, and he's down for the show. So I've said, I need you to listen to a few of these and tell me, was I right to say no?
Okay.
So he's my quality control guy.
All right. Well, it's good to know that we have a vast staff supporting us in our endeavor.
And dude who is listening right now and wondering if you're the quality control guy, yes, it's you. I'm talking about you. Okay.
Right. If you listen, you are the quality control.
The one. What percentage do you think, though? Like, if someone hears, what was a good one recently? Radicals, ratios, and, what was that one? I can't even remember the full title. But the one about ratios and radicals, and then the last mm-hmm. something.
Isn't like free radicals? And
yeah, we talked about free radicals and ratios of chemicals and things mm-hmm. like that, which is a pretty solid one.
Okay.
What percentage in your mind come back to listen after one of those?
I would guess it's somewhere between 1% and 1/10%.
Seriously? Like yeah. that low?
Well, I'm just, you know.
It's just not very sticky. There's not a lot of.
It's an acquired taste, like Gorgonzola cheese. See, that's what I'm saying. Only a few percentage of people like Gorgonzola crumbles on their
are
salad.
Are we the streak of mold in the cheese, or are we the cheese?
Well, I think you can't have one without the other in the blue cheese family. One would say we are the streak of mold in the cheese.
The Blue Cheese Family, know. Is that one of those canceled after three episodes shows the Disney Channel puts together each year?
Right. They travel around a bus and sing about salad dressing, something like that. Wasn't that the Partridge Family?
How long has it been since you watched a children's show?
Well, you know, when you're zipping through the channels. Well, for example, I was reminded of some of the children's shows I watched because I stood in line for 2 hours registering at Dragon Con on Saturday.
Dude, you did Dragon Con?
I did Dragon Con. I took my son, but he got bored after a while, so we didn't stay all that long. I'm like, look dude, we got to stay till 9 o'clock tonight. That's when the weirdos come out.
I've been hearing a little bit of, hey, not so great from people about Dragon Con. And not even that.
Was it overcrowded this year? It's very popular.
It seemed like there was everyone I asked about it was like, yeah, it was fine. Like, there wasn't...
Yeah, I saw one stormtrooper. I saw no Wookiees.
Isn't there supposed to be a march of stormtroopers?
Well, yeah, there's a parade, but we missed the parade because we were waiting in line to register. Parade route was lined, you know, several people deep to watch this sort of thing.
I've never been interested in going to Dragon Con. I have trouble with a lot of people.
Oh, just, yeah, it's a lot of people. It's very, very crowded. Yeah. But I will say this, having participated in it and given some technical lectures 2 years ago, the science track really attracts your average person that's really interested in science. It's a good thing. We put together a comedy show with the Skeptic track last year, but we got bumped by the Amazing Randy. And a lot of my young comedians are like, Amazing Randy, who's this guy?
That's many people's dream, to be bumped by the Amazing Randy.
No, the Amazing Randy, again, you don't mean that in like some disco dance way, do you?
I might have.
The Amazing Randy is a debunker of silly people that believe in magic and bending of spoons and things like that.
Spoon bending was the first thing I heard Amazing Randy talk about.
Yeah, he was on The Tonight Show and he debunked the guy. Who was Uri Geller?
Uri Geller.
Yeah. And his theory was he took the spoons, bent them back and forth so they were weakened. So just simply by shaking them as he applied his mind, he could do that. It's a very plausible explanation.
There's also just the idea that if you hold a spoon in your hand, you basically have the leverage to bend it, you know, just by kind of pressing your palm towards your fingers with another finger, you know, sort of the leverage.
What, do you lift weights 24 hours a day? I don't think so. If you've bent it back and forth a lot, you can.
No, think about a regular, like a classic, like thin spoon.
Right, but he simply sort of holds it and waves it and suddenly
yeah, but,
it bends.
But it's also sleight of hand. That's what the Amazing Randy was saying.
I think his theory was he didn't put his thumb on it and bend it.
If a dude or a lady can make a card pop out of a deck, another dude can bend a spoon and have you not see it.
But his theory was that he prepared his spoons in advance, bent them back and forth, like you could do this with a coat hanger.
I find a delicious irony that I am skeptical of this skeptic's explanation of how it happened. I think that it's a lot less complicated than that.
But see, Yuri Geller,
I think it
always
was distraction, and I think he bent it against the desk.
He refused to use someone else's spoons.
Right, they're his spoons.
That's the evidence that, in fact, he had pre-prepared.
I'm always interested in the moment that a person who's doing that, like when they start saying, "I can't believe I'm locked into this," you know, like Yuri Geller, if he only uses his own spoons. He says he bends them with his mind. He does not. It's clear he does not. It's a performance. It's like Pee Wee Herman. Mm-hmm. At what point does Paul Rubens appear on a talk show as Paul Rubens and talks about the character? At what point does Yuri Geller just say, "Yes, okay, look, I was doing this with the spoons, and somehow I got on Carson. I still don't understand how," and you know?
But he never did that, though.
But there has to be a moment when he thought about doing it.
Probably. But see, I have no... magic and sleight of hand. I think that's perfectly fine. There's a woman who's traveling around the country doing the submerged straitjacket escape thing that Houdini used to do, actually. And it's pretty good. And it's pretty, pretty, can I say hair-raising with two bald guys in the studio? Yes, I'm going to do that. You know, she does it in 3 minutes.
Raise up.
And it's in a clear lucite tank. So you're there, and you're wondering, is she going to make it out? Because she's cutting it close each time. That is an amazing feat.
There's no
magic. There's no lying.
No, it's just doing it.
And you know, and she, you know, she pulls a bobby pin out of her hair or something and picks the locks. But you try picking all these locks in 3 minutes while you're hanging upside down in water. That is impressive.
Yeah, it's like wrestling on TV.
Yeah,
the storyline is fake for wrestling, but those guys are actually doing
jump off the turnbuckle and try and smash somebody and then not smash him. That's athletic. That's
I saw Teller impressive. Of Penn and Teller during a Penn and Teller show get out of a straitjacket while hanging upside down.
Yeah, and they do this bullet trick, and no one's been able to figure out
why. Catching, yeah.
And they're pulling
teeth
a trick.
Teeth catching. I don't know why I said it that
they're
way. Yeah,
catching a bullet in their teeth.
Caught in the teeth.
But that's impressive.
Although I don't believe for a moment that they're actually catching it in their teeth.
No,
it's
I don't believe that
how
either.
Do they get the bullet from the gun to the teeth?
Yeah, how do they trick you? I think that's amazing. I think that's all great. I think that's fine. But, you know, just be honest about it. And that's what the Amazing Randy once said, that he finds the actual universe in which we live, without magic and crazy stuff, already fascinating enough. He doesn't need all this sort of stuff. So, but here's what I'm saying about Dragon Con. Dragon Con engages people and talks about science and technology. And
creates
finally
a community.
I'm going to get organized this year, and I think we're going to have a bigger presence from Georgia Tech.
I do not believe that you will get organized this year.
I'm going to. And Lisa Yazyk, for example, she talks about science fiction there because she does work on science fiction.
If you hadn't gotten organized up to this point in your life, why would you do it now?
I was very organized 2 years ago.
Don't think that's true.
We're going to start a panel. No, are you kidding? I had like 4 different programs at Dragon Con, and it was great. And it was well attended. People that work in science are burnt out. So oftentimes, if you're giving a technical lecture, it'll be like Thursday afternoon, the second to last day of the conference. It'll be you, the 5 speakers, the 2 chairs, and like 4 guys in the room. These things were packed out. A 90-person room, you had 86 people. Sometimes it was overflowing out the door. People were engaged. They were asking questions. There was an electrical engineer asking me questions about science in your everyday life lecture I was giving you.
What was your secret?
No, this is Dragon Con. People come there, and they're actually fascinated. And this woman was painted completely blue with fairy wings, and she was an electrical engineer. You don't get questions like that in technical meetings.
What question did she ask? What question did the blue fairy ask?
No,
you?
I don't remember. But we were just talking about science in your everyday life and things like that. And people were very engaged, and they really enjoyed it. And then we did a sort of a nerd comedy show, and they packed the room and were overflowing out the door. Now, admittedly, the group next door was doing the science of beer, and they were giving away free beer.
That was their secret.
And they were packed, and they were out the door. And admittedly, before the show started, I walked up to Drew, who ran the beer thing. I said, "Hey, how about, you know, a little something for the effort, for the convenience?" And he let me go to the front. The point is, they would give you a free beer if you asked a question about brewing beer. And I just said, you know, how about a little something for the... So I went in and grabbed like 6 or 7 beers for the comedians and walked them next door.
I have a question about beer.
Yeah.
Why does so much of it that is popular taste bad?
Can you give me an example? Because taste is subjective. What do you think is bad?
That's true. I'll ask my question again. Why is it that so much beer that is popular tastes bad to me?
Well, I'm going to say most of your store, grocery store in the can, mass marketed ones are just kind of boring. I only drink decent beer, so like Sam Adams or a European beer or something like that. Not really expensive, but, you know, because I don't drink a lot of beer.
Mm-hmm.
So I figure I can, you know, I'm going to buy a six pack of something that's...
You want to taste it.
Yeah, then I want to taste it. So, and that doesn't mean I like all the really thick beers that you eat with a fork.
The Belgian beers?
No, I mean the British beers are that way too. I don't like stouts. They're
no,
too thick.
No Guinness for you?
I'm not a big Guinness guy. But I mean, I like Sam Adams. I like Blue Moon. I like the microbrewery ones.
I need to come clean with you on this question.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm really asking is, why do I like Budweiser and dislike the craft?
Oh, are you the opposite? Beer. Do you like Budweiser?
I really love Budweiser and Kona and Red Stripe and even Dos Equis. Those are my favorite beers.
Oh, but I like Dos Equis and Red Stripe.
Right, but I really like Budweiser.
Then I think you should drink it.
My question is not whether I should continue to drink the Budweiser, because I am going to do that. My question is, why is it that, say, the IPAs, the very...
The Pale Ales.
Yes, the award-winning IPAs and otherwise, I taste them and I think, this is not good.
But if it's an IPA, it's not very strong. It's not very bitter. It's not like you're drinking a heavy...
There's a sting on the back of my tongue when I drink beers that people say are good. Ugh, I say.
That's okay. I think you should drink the beers you like. I mean, I find Budweiser and Miller a little too watery for me. But I do like... what's the one you put the lime in all the time?
Any of them that you want.
What's the other one?
You should put citrus in whatever beer you want to put in. You should cut your beer with lemonade
Budweiser,
if you like.
Oh, so I do drink shanties. I'm a shanty fan. I like shanties. Shanty is beer and some kind of fruity lemonade thing. They tend to use more fruit juices in Germany, and they will use lemonade. Their lemonade's a little different than our lemonade. It's kind of a tart citrus carbonated
like
thing.
It's more lemons, not, you know, sugar water. I never knew about shanties until the end of the book Wonder Boys by Michael Chabon, or Chabon. Chabon. Our hero, if you've seen the movie, it's the character that Michael Douglas plays. Our hero is gotten to the other side of his midlife crisis, and he's smoking a lot less dope, and he's drinking a lot less beer. And the beer that he does drink, he cuts with, if the line is right, cool, sweet lemonade. His Iron City, he cuts with lemonade. I said, well, what's that all about? That's crazy. I looked it up, and it's a thing. So then I did it. I said, this is awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it really was.
Yeah, I drink them when I'm in England. I think they're great.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. You should drink what you want.
Absolutely. And I don't really care anymore about people not liking the beer that I drink. For a long time, I did my best to find the lines that I was drinking something that people would make fun of, because I hate being made fun of. I mean, there was way too much of that when I was a kid, and I just can't. I just don't like it. And for a long time, people made fun of my beer choice, and then I tried to not have that beer choice. And then I think it was after I got married. I said, you know what? I'm not done. I like Budweiser.
Mm-hmm.
And if you beer... I've learned how to... I think I've said this already, but I've learned how to order Budweiser in places that don't have it. You ready? I'd like an American-style lager, you know, sort of light, maybe medium body. I like a clean finish, not too hoppy.
Yeah, that's a good description of Budweiser. And Miller, probably.
And then sometimes a server will look at me and say, you just want a Budweiser, don't you? But sometimes they don't. They say, oh, yeah, Smoltz has a Pilsner that's very good. I'm like, whatever works for you, man. That sounds good to me.
Okay.
The only reason I brought this up is because if I had to ask a question of a brewmeister... Yeah. I would say, why is the quality beer so often not to my taste? I don't feel like a person who has immature tastes. I don't feel like
you don't in music and literature. You have wacky tastes.
But even in even in food, you know, I mean, I can't come up with any examples. People are going to say,
do you like
that's not mature.
Do you like gorgonzola crumbles?
I do. I do when okay. I was joking.
That's
when
mature.
I was going, that
mature
was because
attempt.
I don't want to be compared to mold, but I love blue cheese and gorgonzola.
I think you should be compared to mold.
I've had stinky feet cheese and been sort of interested in it.
Okay.
That's not a technical term. That's just what it smelled like when we opened it up. The wax paper opened and there was a waft of, whoa, gym socks. But we ate it. We tried it, you know. Hard olives. A Negroni is one of my favorite cocktails, which is Campari and gin and sweet vermouth. You know, I mean, these are complex, interesting flavors, you know. I like a good whiskey. I drink scotch, you know. I don't feel like, oh.
But anything with Campari in it is kind of an oversweet European thing. So a lot of guys from New York would say, well, you know, like Campari Orange or something like that.
You know. So I'm just saying, I've never felt like, oh, you know, I really just want mac and cheese and Coca-Cola, because I don't. Although, it doesn't sound good. It sounded good for a second, then I thought, no, that would be terrible.
But have you ever had a gourmet mac and cheese?
I have.
They're good. There's nothing wrong with macaroni and cheese.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with mac and cheese. I'm saying that mac and cheese is, and chicken nuggets is kind of like a let's get down on the floor and just eat and not be. I don't want to be messed with and I don't want to be challenged.
But I think everyone who exists on the planet, even if they have very sophisticated tastes in any particular thing, does like the equivalent of the, the tabloid in literature or the.
That. Okay.
I mean, what was the movie that starred Sean Connery, who discovered this brilliant young high school student who was an excellent writer?
Oh, Finding Forrester.
Finding Forrester?
Yeah, he didn't discover him. Forrester broke into his apartment.
Yeah, well, that's often how things happen. So, you know, leave the door ajar. That's
you ever see Love is the Devil about Francis Bacon, not the scientist?
Francis Bacon, not the scientist. Well, he was kind of a natural philosopher.
No, the painter. The painter Francis Bacon.
Oh,
he was
okay.
A much more modern.
Okay.
Much more, as in he lived in this past century.
Mm-hmm.
Love is the Devil is his boyfriend he meets by when the boyfriend breaks into the house.
Aren't there a lot of movies that start that way? There was one with Dennis Leary when he broke into a house.
Yeah.
Was it Long Island?
The
or
Ref.
Like that?
Yeah,
The Ref.
Yeah.
So it's a common plot.
Is there a waste of life named Gus? Oh, yeah, that's me.
All right, but here's the deal. No matter how sophisticated your tastes are, like Sean Connery, who was a Pulitzer Prize winning author.
A Salinger clone.
Yeah. He, you know, would read the great literature, and then the evenings for dessert, he'd read the tabloids. And
yeah.
Say, well, that's for dessert. That's okay. I mean, people are like, oh, that's my little secret. I like Budweiser. When, in fact, you brew beer. So who cares? You like what you like. You like a light beer without this strong, bitter, hoppy finish.
I'm not cool with those
hops. Yeah, and that's why, you know, to me, stout is so bitter and so thick. You know, I don't like it.
Maybe the key is that now... and, you know, in the past 10 years, there's been sort of a movement for craft. Ooh, you see, I'm going to segue into our chosen topic for today. I'm going to do it real subtle, too, so the audience won't know, okay?
But now that you've tipped them off, they're like, these guys are transparent as, I don't know.
Transparent as a government that has your best interests in mind.
Normally so, not that transparent.
There's been a movement for craft beer and for this sort of...
a lot of home brewing, a lot of stores.
Brewing, the sort of like artisanal quality of beer. You know, the idea that with care and good ingredients...
Yeah, I don't like the word artisan. It just means it's marked up 50%.
Well, okay, what would the proper term to signify what artisan
no,
tends
artisan
to
is
signify?
Okay.
No, I want to do this.
Carefully made by an artisan, as opposed to some schmo.
It is not a word. That's a German word.
What?
Possibly.
Artisan?
No. The word carefully made by someone who is an artisan and not a poser. That's like one word in German.
Are you picking on the German language?
I'm not picking on the German language. You are the one who knows German.
The German language has some long words
yes.
and some longer sentences.
Long words that mean an immense amount, yes?
Like, super Teilchen Beschleuniger. Super particle accelerator, which actually sounds like something made out of latex you buy in a dull bookstore. Good evening, my dear. Tonight I have the super Teilchen Beschleuniger.
So I feel that there has been a movement to make beer better, more interesting, less mass-produced.
I like it. I like the new craft beers.
Often not good.
I like the microbreweries. I do. I like Sweetwater. I like
anything that is it requires an aesthetic interpretation, be it food or music or literature, you know, television, narrative and art and stuff we consume. Mm-hmm. Mass produced, it's maybe not good for you.
Sometimes that is true.
Yeah. But
case in point, the slow food movement. Instead of fast food, it's slow food.
Although you should cook as fast as you can. You should cook right up to the speed you're able to cook. You shouldn't, like...
And by slow food, we don't mean that you just pissed off because you're waiting at the drive-thru window.
Have you ever cooked scrambled eggs for 45 minutes?
No, that would be bad.
No, it would not. Here's the thing. If you turn the heat low enough, keep those eggs moving, you can have scrambled eggs that cook for 45 minutes.
But do they taste better?
They are amazing.
Really?
I once cooked scrambled eggs for 25 minutes in my in-law's kitchen, right? And I even got a little hell from my sister-in-law. You know, she's like, how are those eggs coming, Charlie? You're taking your time with them, you know? And I did, and they were good.
Why are they better?
I don't know.
No, scientists would say that the thermal time signature... Right? So ultimately, you might put in the same
Did
amount of energy.
Did you just say thermal time signature?
Yeah, that's not the word I want. What I want is the thermal profile. The temperature or the amount of heat added over time changes.
This is amazing. What are you talking about?
So the processing of materials, and that would include eggs, because you're putting them in there and the heat is cross-linking some proteins and it's
making
them firmer.
I don't like
eating
processed food.
Well, cooking is processing. Remind me of John Cusack. I don't want to... Eat anything that's processed. I don't want to process anything that's whatever.
That's eaten. I don't want to buy anything that's processed. I don't want to eat anything that's processed or bought.
Good line.
But the point is, my favorite part of that say anything bit is at the end where he just kind of breaks down. He goes, I don't want to process anything sold, bought. He misses the and at the
that's
end.
Okay.
It's great.
His mind melted. But the point is, if you're cooking... or if you're doing metallurgy on some weird chromium molybdenum steel alloy,
you should not put chrome in your eggs. Though.
The rate I do agree with Charlie on that one. The rate at which you heat or process or refrigerate or whatever it is, the rate makes a big difference in the properties of the materials, including
the taste
of eggs.
So to answer your question, Pete, I think it's because of the rate of the coagulation of the curds.
Yeah, it's a complex thing. The way
it's
we
much creamier. It's almost
proteins.
Like polenta. The longer you take, and the more you
polenta,
move the
now
eggs.
You're showing your Mediterranean sort of culinary roots.
Look how white
I am. You could have said grits.
I'm the palest guy.
Isn't
you know.
Grits yellow corn stuff too?
I'm actually not anymore.
No, grits is white corn. Sorry,
polenta. I used to be
corn.
Pale, like the underside of a crippled dog.
The underside of a crippled dog?
Yeah.
Thank God I haven't eaten recently.
Just imagine, you know, imagine a dog who's always lying on his stomach and, you know, he never sees the sun, you know?
All right, now you're trying to frighten our listeners. That's what you're doing. All right, were you going to segue into something? You got off on eggs.
I learned how to make eggs by an iterative process.
Ooh, okay. And how would you define an iterative process? Trying it over and over again, iterating until you get it right.
So the way I'm built when it comes to tasks, accomplishing things, I very much prefer to do the same process over and over again and see how that works and have the mistakes.
But because you're changing some variables.
Maybe a little bit changing, okay. But even not changing, I prefer to... And this used to happen when I was a younger man. Mm-hmm. I used to watch television shows over and over and over again.
Because
a rewatch changes the interpretation because you bring more out of the text.
Yeah.
And in my defense, I wasn't rewatching The Big Bang Theory.
Okay,
I wasn't rewatching. Sitcoms that were based on you know, the setup, punchline, setup, 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 punchline.
You were
punchline.
Rewatching classics like The Big Lebowski.
Well, that's a movie. But yeah, I was rewatching The Big Lebowski. But I was also, I watched Deadwood maybe okay. 5 or 6 times.
Okay.
I mean, the whole thing. I've watched The Wire several times. this is a little less cool. Sports Night and The West Wing, I've overwatched, you know.
I like The West Wing, though.
Yeah, but I, so watching and rewatching to sort of pull more out of the pull pieces out of
because you've illustrated you're neurotic now beyond your neuroses.
So I'd also cook eggs the yeah. same as I would rewatch Deadwood, say, you know, the same amount of cursing and a little less blood.
I hope so.
It's hard to cut yourself while cooking scrambled eggs.
Yes, unless you're chopping things up to put into them, like for an omelet.
I've never cut myself. I did cut myself making breakfast tacos that involve scrambled eggs.
Well, it's official. We've run out of topics. Breakfast tacos. Don't you want to talk about the Georgia Tech Design Collaborative, which would allow people to iteratively design things in this open prototype design studio maker space?
Right. So when you talk about iterative process, it's really appealing to me to try the same thing over and over again, where, you know, variables that are simply the time of day or, you know, the materials that you use are actually what's kind of changing as you mm-hmm. as you do and redo. I really love that. But I was actually surprised at this recent push in higher education for iterative design principles, especially multidisciplinary mm-hmm. groups doing iterative design. I think you know what that is, right? All I know is, you know, iterative over and over again, and design, well, you know, design, dude.
Okay, I'm going to quote Carlin on this one. Well, it's a mystery.
I'm kind of lost. You know, I get a sense of it. You know, you got a group of whomever, right, be it students or, say, a research team.
Faculty, staff, mm-hmm. people that came in off the street.
Idea, prototype, test, return. You know, you've said it before, the shampoo, you know, lather, rinse, repeat kind of way of approaching problem solving. And so I get that. It's pretty simple to think that you should have a group whose brainstorming is enriched by their varied backgrounds, who take ideas and very quickly mm-hmm. take that idea into a reality that is testable. You know, like if you 3D print a widget and then you toss that to someone and say, hey, what do you think of that widget? You're supposed to hold it in your hand and, you know, hit your friend with it and it doesn't hurt them. And they say, oh, yeah, okay. And they hit their friend and their friend's like, that really hurts. So it's like, well, back to the drawing board. You know, you test these ideas over and over again.
That's probably how we came up with a lot of the weird swords they sell at DragonCon. I asked the guy. So,
Nerf testing must be really
so Nerf,
fun.
Nerf is polyurethane foam, very, very soft. No one's going to get sued over that.
Extruded foam, yes. Or is it molded?
I don't know. It could be. It depends. It depends on the exact material. So I cannot speak intelligently.
Stay on target. Stay on target. Red number 5.
The nature of urethane foam
red
formation.
Red 5. You turned off your targeting
principles.
Computer.
But they have, if you do this role playing stuff, this
are we talking D&D?
No, not D&D. Live action
LARPing.
LARPing. Live action role playing. So LARPing,
I met a LARPer once.
You know, these aren't urethane. This is something
PVC
that'll
pipe.
This'll leave a mark. No, they don't have PVC pipe. PVC pipe can knock you out if it's heavy gauge.
I'm not funning you.
Put polyethylene foam.
I'm crapping you negative. PVC pipe skeleton wrapped in like the pipe foam stuff. You know,
right? But those would be either
that's serious stuff, and I have seen people whack each other with that,
or closed cell cross-linked polyethylene. Which is tougher, and that'll leave a mark if they whack you in the
head. I saw the Society for Creative Acronym run at each other once in a little park on the side of Ponce, driving home, and it was just a moment of all these people in armor with big.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hard foam swords.
Yeah, this is the harder foam. This is polyethylene, not polyurethane.
It was friggin'.
Yeah, it'll leave a mark if it catches you upside the head. But you got
Braveheart.
A shield.
It was Braveheart.
Yeah, you got a shield. So I learned that we probably kind of LARPing, stuff. You know, they tried with urethane and they weren't sufficiently invested. So they needed something that'll leave a little bit, kind of like paintball.
So right? You try not to get hit.
Paintball, you exercise strategy because if you get hit, okay, you're not going to die. It's not like tear gas. It's not like the beanbag. It's not like a rubber bullet. But you want to avoid it. And now you got these young kids doing airsoft. So they'll put stuff that covers their eyes. Have you ever been shot by an airsoft gun?
I don't think so.
It's
what
hard
is that?
Polystyrene pellet. This will leave a mark.
No,
this
I don't want to be shot mark. By that.
Right, but have you ever been hit by a paintball? That leaves a welt.
I've never done paintball. My brother paintballs, and I've thought about it. Mm-hmm. But I just think about being in the woods with a mask on where I can't really see very well with people shooting at me, and I think, no, I don't think that's for
but
me.
But it's an iterative thing, so they probably went through different types of foam before they figured out the best LARPing thing. And that's the whole idea, but did you mention 3D printers?
I toss that out as a part of the process. That's how you might go very fast from idea to prototype. Yeah. And so design
we
process.
We used to call a slightly different version of that rapid prototyping. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's very important.
So the design process is kind of a mystery to me. I say kind of because I don't know if it's the skin or the skeleton. I don't know what the proper metaphor would be. You know, the things I've just listed, you know, idea, prototype, test, refine.
Right.
Refine, circling back to idea. I mean, I think that that's... Does
yeah,
that kind of
general,
explain
that's
design?
A reasonable
design?
Thing, but you'll get people arguing over two things. One, the details of how that works. And two, the words that you get to use.
Yes.
Like ideation. I love that one. Ideation.
Ideation. Like idea.
Creation, I guess. I don't know. I don't think it's important what you do. I don't think it's important exactly
didn't
how you
do it. Didn't we ideate this podcast?
Did we? No. You showed me this thing and you said, "Where are we going to talk about this?"
You thought that maybe I would be a good guest host for Inside the Black Box and that didn't work out. So then we said, well, how are we going to do this? And we ideated. Maybe. I don't know.
All right, but really what you're talking about is this big movement due to the fact that – and this is relatively obvious. Libraries have a lot of space.
Oh, now you brought libraries in.
Isn't that what we're talking about?
Easy there, man. We got to slide in slowly.
Now you're talking dirty.
Like a person entering a jacuzzi.
Okay. You do going slowly because it's hot.
Yeah.
And you got to test the water.
Would you say that the whole design thing, it's just – what people want to call it. Is it like beer? Is design like beer?
Is design like beer? I don't know about that one. I'm going to have to get back to you on that one.
Okay. Have you taught design?
I have.
When did you teach design?
The summer semester, just this
just
past.
Just passed. Yeah. Okay, so it was a new thing to you. You were caught by the growing swell.
No, we've been teaching this course for eons.
Oh, well, no, that's what I meant then. I mean, when you've taught design, when did you teach design? When did design enter into your...
Wheelhouse? You can use one of those things?
Yeah, or your toolbox.
I don't get the wheel toolbox. I mean, I guess it's like 4 or 5 years ago.
One of my favorite of those things you were just talking about is when someone's in your kitchen, get them out of your kitchen.
But if they're in your wheelhouse, it's okay.
Wheelhouse is okay, but kitchen...
Then you like have a cup of coffee with the captain before the ship goes down.
I'm not a sports guy. I don't like
a
lot of
sports metaphors.
But I adore the adoration of baseball. And I'm going to say that again. It wasn't a stutter. I adore the adoration of baseball. So
you
I love
adore
baseball.
The fact that people adore baseball.
I love baseball movies. I love the way people talk
baseball
about baseball.
Movies,
I love the myths of
I
baseball.
Like sports movies,
I love the fights over whether baseball
like Yogi
is still
Berra's
romantic.
Sayings
all
and
that
Ty
stuff.
Cobb's antics.
No one goes there anymore. It's too crowded.
Today, I'm the luckiest man, the face of the earth. Sorry.
In Bull Durham, when Kevin Costner is losing it at the plate, he in his head thinks, "Get out of my kitchen!" when he's trying to push thoughts away.
Yeah,
that's why the kitchen thing came up.
Does your mind really work this way, or are you on serious medication?
I'm trying to be open and honest. And unfortunately, most of this particular recording was open and honest about stuff that's kind of fluffy. But I'm just trying.
Okay. All right, are we going to get back to this topic?
Design.
Yeah.
You've taught it.
Yeah, I've taught it, but I mean, people argue about
you
the appropriate ways
to design. You took on a class that was already going?
Yeah, in fact, we co-teach it with a lot of people.
You and Matthew Ralph, my real
Matthew
co-host.
Matthew Ralph, who is the master of design. I mean, he has a number of relevant lectures on how to explore variable space to come up with the optimal solution to some technical or engineering challenge. But it's more than that. Some of it requires kind of a what is it, a right brain? Is that the more creative, open side?
Yeah, because it would switch hands. So the left hand, which is less likely to be dominant, right brain creativity is less likely. Yeah, so right brain is creative and left brain is whatever
right,
that
but you
is.
Can take all these systematic approaches to design, and there are many of them, in which you identify, you know, what your goal is, what the relevant variables are, you know, what the need is. Some approaches to design even take a step back and say, well, why are you even designing that crap? Why don't you pick a real need?
How would you, Pete, define design as a verb?
Gosh, that's a tough one. That's kind of like the flame challenge.
I hear
Explain
you.
To a middle school kid what a flame is.
I think it's important for us to do that right now. Mm-hmm. I get the feeling that we'll be doing this topic a little bit more leading up to the Norman stuff, the freshman reading program thing. So let's try and get some principles down now.
Well, whatever you do, you always come up with a zeroth order approximation.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's your first best
guess. I blacked
out. That's your first
best
guess.
Were you talking?
Yeah, I was.
Zeroth?
Yeah.
Is that a Greek god?
That's like preseason football. Like,
what did I just say about sports?
You said you love sports analogies, so I'm using one. Only baseball? Football's off limit? Is that what you're saying?
You are not an active listener, Pete.
No, you said you like to do baseball, but I'm going outside the box here, dude. I am bringing in football.
Okay.
Preseason football,
much like
the Georgia Tech Elon University game this past weekend.
From what I understand, that game was unbalanced.
We beat them 70-0. I believe that's a record.
Are you on the team?
No, I'm not on the team, but I can read the internet. I didn't listen to the game. I should have.
What about preseason?
So you do preseason football to fine-tune your team.
Okay, and then you connected that to zeroth what? Order of?
So someone said, well, what's your first design? You know, and I'm basically saying, look, I don't want to get blamed for the first design not being that good. I'm going to call it the zeroth design. I could call it the negative one, the negative first design if I wanted.
Okay, what when you say what's your first design, what are you – because I really want to get at the definition of design. Mm-hmm. You're being kind of slippery. You're a little bit like that catfish I tried to catch once.
Don't kid yourself. You never tried to catch a catfish.
I did.
Did you really?
And I want you to know that neither one of us enjoyed it.
Okay.
So define design.
Again, define design.
Feel free to use materials around the room.
I use marshmallows and toothpicks if I want.
As a
which
prompt.
Is a common design exercise we have people do. So I'm going to use your phrase. Design is the iterative process by which one assembles a solution to a... I don't want to say engineering or technical challenge because design... Because
interior designers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fashion designers.
Yeah, and this is why Ray Vito hates the word design. He prefers
Ray Vito hates the word design.
Former vice provost here at Georgia Tech.
Education. Of graduate and undergraduate.
Graduate
it was before
undergraduate.
They split it.
Yeah, before they split it into two different positions.
And
design has
separated.
Too many definitions, and that's why Ray doesn't like the word design. He prefers the word invention or innovation.
Why is design now a useless word because it's been saddled with too many definitions?
That may be part of it, but the problem is there are lots of different ways to do design. So let me show you two different sides of it. One is I have to design something relatively simple in which the systematic design approaches to that are already known. So let's pick something I do reasonably well, pumps. Give me a pumping problem. You need to pump something. Give me a fluid in a situation.
I've got a vinyl inflatable animal toy that deflates slowly.
Mm-hmm.
Like every 24 hours, it's down.
Okay.
So I got to get it, and I got to find the little thing and pop it out and bite it with my teeth, actually, to open up the valve and then blow it up. And then my head hurts, and my child is a little bit less than pleased that her lion was soft and she'd rather have it be happy and up. So that's a pumping problem, is it not?
Right. So you're pumping a gas. So there are a couple different things that we can use. We can either use some kind of blower, which is really a fancy fan that has sort of cowling around it. We know how to design those. So if I know the pressure you need and I know the delivery rate, I can just pick it out. I can pick it off the shelf. I can use some basic principles to do that.
You'd be designing a solution to my problem, which is that the lion needs to be inflated and I have very little wind.
Right. Okay. That's exactly it. So those are well known. I mean, I can look up the dimensions of these things already. They're already specified. If you needed something at very, very high pressure, I would probably use a compressor. And a compressor is more like the piston of your car. It's this positive displacement thing. You compress in a chamber, and it pushes into that. And then when it pulls back, it changes. It closes that valve. And then you fill it with some more gas, and you push it in there. So if you wanted to do, you know, a high-pressure airstream, you know, these compressors, they sound differently when they're running, right? They sound
I might want to do this if I had a much larger lion.
Right, but particularly if it...
A lion the size of a house.
No, not really. So say you had a lion the size of a house. The good example of that would be the inflatable bouncy toys. Most of those use fans.
Not a compressor.
Not a compressor because it's not a high pressure kind of thing, but it's a huge volume, right?
Ah, okay.
And you run it continuously.
Compressor does not.
Because some of those bouncy things
on a compressor,
they leak, right?
Because of all the abuse.
Well, that was partly because of the abuse, partly because of the nature of the seams of these things. They don't seal all that well. And partly you want that. So when you're bouncing it, you want it to leak out a little air and have it be replaced. Right, the inflatable buildings are that way. Right, they use
like when a stunt person drops into.
Yeah,
I think the air goes.
Yeah,
out.
That one actually has big flaps. It's designed when you hit it really fast, those valves open. Yeah, but then you inflate it back up. So the point is, if you want to just design something to pump a gas, those principles are well known. You can almost do what we did with the 787 Dreamliner, designed by wire, design in the computer. Right? You can do it. You can pick it out and you'll be almost spot on to exactly what you need. But if it's something new, if it's something that hasn't been done before, then you need to take the principles you do have, design that thing, and then start monkeying with it. And a good example I can think of, and I'm not sure this is how they do it, but I imagine the first one was done this way. And that is it's a type of hinge. So when you think of a hinge, you think of a door hinge, right? These little interlocking pieces.
Also when I'm trying to rhyme orange.
That has really? Hinge, I guess, is close to orange.
Door hinge. Kind of rhymes with
that's
orange.
That's close.
If you slur.
If you've had a couple drinks.
Often the Irish poets use orange and door hinge.
Okay. Well, that'll work. But the point is there's a type of hinge that you can make that's a little tougher to make.
Doesn't your lung have a hinge in it?
Where do you come up with this crap? I mean,
I'm almost positive that there's some part of the human body that is a hinge.
Yeah, well, yeah, most of your joints are hinges. I mean, a ball and socket joint, I mean, in a sense.
That ball and socket joint hinge? No.
Well, but here's the thing.
What about
if you think of a door hinge?
A stone hinge.
I was watching this as Spinal Tap this weekend.
Does it go up to 11?
Well, it's 11. It's not 10. but take, and I'm gonna. I mean this neither as a
like the flaps
indictment.
Like your ventricles,
a flap.
They have hinges, don't they?
Yeah. So a flap is a type of hinge, right?
Much
so
like a spoon
hinge.
That's been bent over and over again until it's flattened.
Or the top
and
of a Tic Tac container.
Did Did you see the thing about how with the Tic Tac, you flip the thing over instead of shaking and shaking and shaking? You can just flip it over and you get a Tic Tac just by opening the thing up. We've been using Tic Tac containers wrong all this time.
And it uses this very nice hinge where you extrude plastic into a mold, into a shape.
I knew we were going to talk about extruding.
You knew you were, because why did you know we were going to talk about extruding?
Because we're talking about design. And there is no design without extruding plastic.
Well,
these days.
Actually, in 3D printers, Boom. That's extruded plastic.
Excuse me, that was a mic hit. Sorry about that.
But if you make it such that one part of it is sufficiently thin that you can bend it back and forth, then that's this kind of passive hinge. It's not the classical hinge that you work with. If you make it too thin, it will break. If you make it a little bit thicker but still too thin, after you go back and forth a million times, it will break. If you make it too thick, it won't bend. Or if it bends, it'll sustain more damage and it'll change its properties.
That's
a complicated design.
Let's talk about the tic-tac hinge a little bit.
Iterate, yeah.
So some people, I think, and maybe even myself, would think that figuring out how thick to make the plastic is not part of design.
That is part of design.
But I'm saying that...
Really?
That
would?
Because when you say invention, when Ray says invention, not design, invention, I think, has the feeling of the aha, tungsten, not yarn, not hair, not copper, but tungsten. That's what makes a light bulb a light bulb.
Well, certainly the tungsten, which is sometimes used for light bulb filaments, but the first one that really was in practical use was carbon impregnated fiber.
But I'm saying
that was found by iterating.
Right. But I'm saying that just as the light bulb is the symbol of invention, right? The idea.
Right.
I think that there is not a popular understanding that the invention process was the going through all of those materials to see if they would work as a filament for a light bulb.
I think that's the very definition of Edisonian invention.
And yet, we think about light bulb and eureka as invention. I have invented a maneuver, said Heimlich.
Did Heimlich really say that?
No.
I don't think so. No.
No, that was
what
a,
people
that was
don't
Eddie
think
Izzard.
Of the light bulb as
people
an example
think of the,
invention.
People think of the light bulb as invention, and they use it as a
symbol for
a
invention
metaphor,
because it is
right.
invention.
But they do not use it as a symbol for trying all of the filaments. You know what
but
I mean?
That is invention.
Who's on first?
What's on second?
I don't know who's on third. I'm saying, Pete, that I think that you are correct. And I think that in popular understanding, the long methodical process of trying all the things, the filaments of light bulbs or the various thicknesses of the tic-tac hinge, I think does not get thought of as invention or design.
I think it does. I think you're wrong. I think you're completely wrong.
Okay.
Why don't you think of this as invention? Oh, so do people are you saying that people think that inventions just sort of happen? Like, oh, that's the idea.
The lightning strike, I think, is the metaphor. Like the light bulb clicking on over the cartoon character's head.
Right.
Like Archimedes. Am I boring you? Like Archimedes
yes.
looking and saying, ah, eureka! And that's a bath thing, right? The water level. I think that is the popular understanding of invention. A slightly crazy person looking at you and saying, I've invented this thing.
Well, so this is why it's so hard to describe design, because sometimes you do have the eureka moment, but oftentimes you start to invent one thing, and then you systematically design it, and you make a prototype, and you keep changing that prototype and refining that prototype, and then you realize this is the dumbest thing ever and will likely never work. And even if it does work, nobody gives a crap.
That's like the time I tried to make hollandaise sauce and got an omelet out of it.
Okay.
I had to break some eggs.
Did your eggs curdle? That's what happens to me in hollandaise sauce.
Hollandaise, it went from a sauce to sort of a baked thing. I'm like, okay.
Okay, so you made a hollandaise frittata. Well, no, that's that's exactly right. That's exactly how it
that's
happens.
That's my new band name.
And then
name,
sometimes you have
hollandaise frittata.
A different you go off in a different direction, right? So these eureka moments, which Isaac Asimov once described as the that's funny moment. Let's take phosphodiesterase inhibitors as an example.
Let's
do that.
Yes, indeed.
These things
are we going to ingest them? Just going to take
them? These were amazing things, and they thought they had something to do with changing blood flow and metabolism. They thought they would be a cure for all sorts of ailments. And then they discovered purely by accident when after the study people were in violation of one of the FDC requirements of drug studies is that you return the unused portion. That's actually a requirement.
Say
right?
What?
That if you have a drug study and you leave the drug study, you terminate the drug study is over, you are required to return the unused portion.
Okay.
That's a rule because think about it. You're doing a study on a drug. You don't know what this thing does. You're trying to figure that out. And if you have just things of it floating around, they had a compliance problem with this.
Landing the compliance ponds, problem, making goldfish glow.
Yeah, the compliance problem was people were not returning the unused portion of these number 5 phosphodiesterase inhibitors because they had a side effect that people didn't want to talk about.
Oh, no.
They fixed erectile dysfunction.
Are you talking about the invention of Viagra?
Yeah, or Cialis or one of these things. I mean, yeah, it was discovered by accident because you were trying to design a drug to do something completely different.
So I can't
Minoxidil,
see very well.
Yeah.
I actually love the irony that it didn't help with eyes that it helped with.
Actually, no, I think it has some
because
positive effects.
They stayed blind, Pete.
Ha ha ha.
They continued
That's
to need
Sister
glasses.
That's an old Sister Mary Neri Catholic grammar school joke. Make a little room for the Holy Ghost in there, kids.
Can I just do it until I need glasses?
The point is, but the same thing, one of these hair-growing things, I think it was minoxidil.
It was Rogaine. Rogaine was going to be a heart
medication. Yeah, it regulates, helps regulate your heartbeat, and that's why they were taking it, and it grew hair back. I mean,
did it grow hair back or just stop the baldness?
I don't know. I don't really care because it's too late for the two of us. The point is—
I actually saw a guy use Rogaine, and by saw a guy use Rogaine, I mean that I know when he started and I know when he stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And he started using Rogaine when his hair was starting to do the thing. It was starting to do the thing,
right?
You know, and it stayed like that for 3 or 4 years, and then he couldn't afford the Rogaine anymore. He stopped using it.
And then
it.
The rest of it fell off,
and it was gone.
Okay,
yeah, it was. He stemmed
so
the tide
of impending doom.
But then, as soon as he stopped, gone.
Okay. So, I guess the point is these. That's funny moment sometimes happens. While you're trying the initial design. Sometimes it happens after you have the initial design and you're doing your prototyping and you realize you have to go back to the drawing board because it's all wrong. Sometimes it happens when you're almost done and you're doing your final fine-tuning of this thing and you realize it has a totally different effect. I mean, all this discovery, you know, hindsight is 20/20, but until you see it and try it and iterate it, you don't understand.
So we've talked about a lot of things on this podcast. I don't mean this particular episode.
No, we just rambled on. Oh,
I don't mean the, whole podcast as a set.
Yeah.
We've talked about our compost bins, and we've talked about classes. We've talked about the actual system of delivering the podcast. We've talked about the podcast itself. We've talked about cooking, eating. I mean, all these. You know, we've talked about a whole bunch of things. I've obviously cannot come up with anything that we talked about now. But those few things, were all of those designs that we had done? I mean, our compost bins, our various compost bins, were those designed? The cooking that we talk about, is that design? You know, when we came up with the idea for this podcast, you know, it's episodic format and the style.
Yeah, but you were just talking about iterative design studios and library spaces. I thought we're going to talk about the mechanics of that. Now you're asking me to define something that's hard to define. Design.
I think you can do it.
Senator, I refuse to answer that question on the grounds it may incriminate me.
Come on, Pete.
You can do, but I would have to put some thought in there. I would have to perhaps do some design work. Yeah, all those are design.
See, so that's what I'm asking. Like design, right. Are we now thinking of design as just the process of coming up with something that is more than itself? Like, you know, when I try to... Ladies and gentlemen, I'm laughing because Pete just checked his watch.
Like, what are you doing? You're like giving me the third degree. We didn't talk about anything at all about the fact that design, and let me not even use design, let me say invention. Invention can include anything. The United States Constitution is an invention.
Where did that example come from? I've heard a lot of
that actually came from
that.
Ray Vito. I like that.
Yeah, okay, so it is that's Ray's thing about how the Constitution could be an invention.
The revenue model for your business is an invention. And let's face it, we're getting very creative with revenue models. In the old day, you had a cash register.
Everything, buddy.
And you just sort of did this sort of thing. And then people that realize, well, we could sell ads on TV. That would work. Now we're selling ads on everything. Pretty soon there's going to be an ad slapped on your forehead. And if that works, someone's going to do it.
Last night, my wife and I were watching the AV Club series called Undercover, which is bands covering songs that maybe you wouldn't expect them to cover.
Okay.
So we were watching YouTube videos, and we kept starting a new YouTube video, every 3-4 minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw this pattern. There was a Walmart ad, and there was a Lenovo ad. Lenovo is the
computer.
The computer with the stylus and the pad and all that stuff. The Lenovo ad, you could not skip. You know how,
right.
Click skip this ad in 4, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Yeah, they'll make you watch it for 3, 5 seconds, and some you can't skip. Yeah, you probably pay extra money for that.
Right, and the Walmart ad, you could skip.
Right, but the new skip after 4 or 5 seconds, that's a new invention.
Exactly. So I was thinking
it used to either be optional or suck it up. You're going to watch the whole thing. But I like the 4 to 5 one because the 4 to 5 one gives you a little taste. You're like, well, I wonder what is happening at Walmart. And you want to watch the end. And you're not as pissed off.
Right. Who watches ads? Who continues watching?
Great invention. Somebody designed that.
Someone designed that, right? Yeah. And so you're saying that the process of deciding which ads go on which YouTube videos and mm-hmm. deciding which ads are, do we say that if you pay enough, no one can skip? Do we just have, is there a process that you have to decide mm-hmm. you can have this kind of ad unskippable or whatever? This is a design too. Like when someone puts up on the whiteboard, do you design a television show?
Yes.
So... What don't we design?
Things that happen by accident.
I mean, is that true? Like, do you design your vacation? I mean, is...
Yeah, I think I do. And if you think about it, so let's say things that happen by accident, improvisation. Improvisation has some systematic rules
to make it
work.
You've designed
there is
a
an
system
element of design
where stuff happens
Absolutely.
Inside it.
There's an element of design.
You design your experiment, and then you see the results. You design your show, and then you see how it goes.
And I think the thing that...
You design your attempt to make Pete crazy.
Indeed.
And then you see how it goes.
It's the gaslight design. That's what you're doing.
I am not
I guess what bothers me the most about
Pete,
design,
do you think I'm gaslighting you?
I think you are.
Are you a little bit under the weather? Are you having trouble? Do you feel like I'm gaslighting you because you're insecure right now?
No, because I think you get some sadistic enjoyment out of it, basically. You're like, anything for a laugh. Let's make Pete go nuts on the air.
Not anything for a laugh.
I guess what bothers me is the fact
any
that...
Any abuse of Pete for a laugh.
People that are in the Ivan Allen College here at Georgia Tech or the Scheller College of Business do not see that what they do is the same thing that the mechanical engineers do with a 3D printer. Now, we may not have an easy
3D printer. How are you making that analogy?
Well, because, you design some object that's going to do some mechanical thing. You print out a prototype in the 3D printer, and then you test it and try it, and then you go back to the drawing board and you iterate again. You can do the same thing in computer science in a revenue model. So in a revenue model, probably someone said, look, I got an idea. Let's not make them watch it because people don't like that, right? We don't like commercials. We digital video record around them, things like that. But what if we just gave them a taste to see – hey, if they do want to, because sometimes I watch the whole commercial.
Do you really?
Yeah, occasionally it's on a product that's interesting to
what
me.
What kind of product? Why? Why would you do that?
Let me think of a recent product that I think is really cool.
I'll give you a minute to think about it by telling you something about that Lenovo ad.
Okay.
So I had to watch that Lenovo ad like 10, 12 times. You know, because
every time you watch
there were more
videos
of the Lenovo ads than Walmart's. The Walmart's were like every fourth ad, and then it was like skip it. So this, and I watched that Lenovo ad as many times as I, 10 times, say, I still don't know what they were advertising about their product.
Well, then their ad is poorly designed.
I didn't understand the narrative of the ad. Mm-hmm. I also don't really understand what the product does. I don't even understand the lifestyle they're suggesting this product connects to, because as far as I could tell, they were saying, if you're an artistic thief with ADD, this is the product for you.
But actually, Lenovo makes a whole series of laptop and desktop.
And the narrative of this ad was that a young, stylish woman who worked in a factory that, Patton Oswalt reference, that makes Sparks, had stolen prototypes of the Lenovo over and over and over again and uses them in her laboratory, which she can't stop moving in. She keeps flipping the Lenovo around. Like,
yeah, you're probably talking about the
any
Lenovo
twitchy way that she uses this, she'll still be able to.
Tablet-based computers, which is their newest computers.
The turn,
you can spin them in the Helix
set it up
and
there,
things like
and,
that.
And, and it's like, why does she just feel like she needs to move the computer so she feels like she's still working on something when essentially all she's doing is watching light and listening to music? And then she etched on it. Put it in the back of a Jeep.
Okay. Is there a point in this rant that you're making here? But that's speaking to a poorly designed commercial. And maybe they're going after a demographic that's not you. Maybe they want people that like the iPad. I don't like the iPad. A lot of my friends do. They really like it. I want a full-fledged computer where I can run all sorts of things on.
Right, and pop the top off and use it.
Yeah, and I pop it off so I actually have the Lenovo Helix, and I like it because I can use it as both a tablet to sort of jot notes down once I figure out Windows 8. I'm not a fan of Windows 8.
So what advertisements have you been watching in their entirety on YouTube?
Oh, I'm trying to remember.
Really? So you don't know? Well,
but I know there have been some.
That's interesting to me, too. Like, it doesn't stick.
There have been some.
I think they're right. I think they, the big they, they're right. The advertising just crawls into you. It's like a parasite. It just sits.
It just crawls up some bodily orifice and lays its eggs inside your gastrointestinal tract.
Stuff is scary.
All right. We didn't get to the point, which is...
No, I feel like we set the stage.
We took an hour to set the stage? That's a long stage setting. That's the craziest thing I ever heard. All right, now you've made me realize that design is all-encompassing. Design is a difficult thing. But I like Ray Vito, I'm a bigger fan with innovation and invention.
Yeah.
And you innovate and invent in a lot of different areas. We always think of it as just the mechanical engineers, but it's not, you know, and also the electrical engineers. So I'm a chemical engineer. Chemical's tough. How would you – and eventually we're going to talk about these – innovation, design, maker spaces
in
libraries.
I think this is
libraries,
part one in several design shows.
Which now
shows.
Exists in the spaces where we used to have books. How do you design chemicals? So I will say this. We've been teaching chemical process design for 100 years, right? Because we made a lot of processes. Now we make chemical products. We have a new course called Chemical Product Design. And these courses have only been popping up over the last decade or two.
Is that when you multiply one chemical by another?
No. But the question is, how do you design chemicals and things that are made out of chemicals and chemical reactions and chemicals?
With very tiny pliers.
But it's funny. We think of the tiny pliers might be a molecular modeling software program as opposed to a solid modeling software program where you can actually make a prototype in a 3D printer. And make no mistake, people are talking about putting 3D printers right in the library now in these new innovation spaces. We already have them in places like the Invention Studio here at Georgia Tech where any student can make a prototype of anything. I could make a chess set that looks like Homer Simpson with your face on it. And actually, you look a lot like Homer Simpson now that I think about it.
This is so scary to me.
But see, people can understand the mechanical part, but can they understand the chemical part or the subtle revenue model part, right? And all those require a very multidisciplinary approach, which is one of the topics that I think we're setting up for now.
Yeah, it sounds like we'll be talking about that design studio in a future show.
Yeah. And truth be told, when we mix a whole bunch of people together, like Ed Coyle has for the Vertically Integrated Projects course, which mixes lots of people together, the reason faculty are scared to death about this is because we don't know how to grade it. It's very difficult to grade. You're not taking a test where you can check to see how accurate the number on question three is.
You might
is.
Have to pay attention to the students and judge them.
Yeah, yeah. It's tougher, but it is the wave of the future. The wave of the future will be open-ended, multidisciplinary things where you'll get together in groups. To some degree, in these maker/design spaces in the library where there used to be books, and now there is invention, design, and innovation.
So, Pete, now that we've gotten kind of the end of the podcast, you can tell me, what's going on? Why are you having such trouble with us just talking about whatever? You seem uptight. You all right?
Because you hoodwinked me. You did a bait and switch.
Consilience with Pete and Charlie is a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities.
What happened to the unity of knowledge, dude?
That's at the beginning. This is at the end.
Oh, okay.
Thanks for listening to Consilience with Pete and Charlie. You can find us on Facebook. You can like our page, share our episode announcements. Follow us on Twitter. You can find us on Tumblr, too, Pete and Charlie. We're all over the internet.
And what does the Georgia Institute of Technology and WRIK Atlanta think of the content of Consilience?
Hopefully, they'll never find out.